Eurosport, the home of cycling.
The Hell of the North, the Queen of the Classics, or just plain old Paris-Roubaix, there's no bike race that can match it for drama. With more than 50 kilometres of terrible rutted cobblestones or pavé, Paris-Roubaix is a race that is stuck in the past. It was started in 1896 by two textile manufacturers who had helped fund the velodrome in Roubaix, although not the one we know today. They wanted a race to make use of the track and promote their business, so they pitched an event to run from Paris up to Roubaix in the suburbs of Lille, and it was pitched as a warm-up for the much longer Bordeaux-Paris event. The race earned its nickname the Hell of the North when it resumed after the First World War. This was not because of the cobblestones, because most roads, even the main routes, were cobbled in those days, but because of the damage done to the landscape and towns by the war. After the Second World War, the French government began smoothing over the cobbled main routes, and as a result, the race got faster and began to lose a bit of its character. It could have become another Paris Tours had the organisers not decided to take the race across the countryside in search of cobbled roads. The famous Wallers-Arenberg section was added in 1968. The sections at Carrefour de l'Arbre and Camphon-en-Pévèle were added in 78 and 80 respectively, and now they are among the most severe stretches of cobblestones.
Oh, they're unique. There's only one day like Paris-Roubaix in the year, and that's what makes it so special. The cobbles of the Tour of Flanders, there's a few hard sections, especially on the Quarmont, but the cobbles of Paris-Roubaix, they're like before the war, and they threw some bombs at it on the war, and that's what left of them, and then we have to ride our bikes over them.
That was Tom Boonen, who won Paris-Roubaix a record four times. It's a record he shares with Roger de Vlaeminck, who is nicknamed Mr. Paris-Roubaix. Sean Kelly's won the race twice, both in the 1980s, but a few years before that, when he turned professional, nothing had prepared him for the cobblestones of northeastern France.
It was just a horror story from the moment we got on the first cobbles, and I think I crashed three or four times. I just wasn't able to ride all the cobbles, and slowly then, on that day, I said to myself, first of all, well, how do these guys do it? How is it possible to ride all the cobbles? And on the wet sections, there were some on that day. You know, I was just sliding all over the place, and as I said, went down many times. I never thought I would see myself winning a Paris-Roubaix.
It took Kelly a few years to learn how to tackle the race then, because it is unlike any other.
Paris-Roubaix, it's an elimination process, but not by the rear door. It can be by the front door. That means on the front of the bunch, before you get to the cobbles, there's so much fighting, all of that. And then when you get to the cobbles, there's so many crashes and so many people fall. And mechanical problems. So Paris-Roubaix, you know, you can be in the best form of your life, but you can get just taken out because of bad luck.
Magnus Baxted won in 2004, out-sprinting Tristan Hoffmann, Roger Hammond and Fabian Cancellara in the velodrome.
The actual sections of cobblestones are not the important ones. The important part is the kilometre leading into the next section of cobbles. That's kind of where you make or break the race, where you waste energy by trying to sort of drag race your competitors into, you know, the next difficult section. You waste teammates, you waste energy yourself. And you know, if you can sit back and wait a bit more and then just make one shorter, harder effort, then you're saving an awful lot of energy. You have a number of guys who are on the start line and they want to be at Paris-Roubaix because they think it's the coolest bike race in the world. A lot of those guys think it's actually even cooler when you get a proper wet sort of bike race. And I'm certainly one of those guys as well. I prefer it being wet. It's supposed to be a wet, miserable, muddy Hell of the North. When it's muddy, it's also a question of bike control. It's a question of how much power you can put down when, and it's staying rubber side down. And with that, certain riders who are just off the very, very peak when it's dry, because of the bike handling skills, they all of a sudden throw themselves into the mix of it. I mean, the first time I rode Paris-Roubaix, I rode it on a steel bike with a RockShox front suspension fork on it. I did that a couple of years actually, and I absolutely loved the feel of that bike. It worked brilliantly. And then all of a sudden, the guys from MAPI came in with their full carbon fiber bikes and straight front forks, and that was kind of the thing, the way forward for some time. Then everyone had to ride that type of a setup on their bikes, and I think it took until 2004 before I found something that really felt good again. And we had a titanium bike made for me with a very big rake on the front fork, and I also got somewhat clarified, mildly insane, by riding 27 mil tires by both the tire manufacturer and my team and everyone around me, really saying that you can't ride a 27 mil tire because you'll lose the whole bike race on the road, too much rolling resistance and so on. As it happened, you know, I tested it a couple of times and didn't have a single puncture, and I'm yet to puncture since I decided to go to 27 mil tires. If you go and look at what the guys are riding today, it's a 28 to 30 mil tires that they're riding on Paris-Roubaix. Just making sure that I was focused enough on everything that was going on around me, and effectively trying to process all the information so quickly that it almost slowed the world down around me, and I had all the time in the world to get to where I wanted to be, putting the wheels in the right places and missing all the major holes and all that sort of stuff. That was more my, I think if you took me on the morning of on the start line of a Paris-Roubaix, it was more or less impossible to contact me or even get a word in. I was so focused on what I was doing that I didn't really have anyone else. There was no one else in the world at that point. Mm-hmm. Forest, I think, is more an iconic place because of the images that we get out of it. It's such a long, straight section of cobblestones that you get there's massive, like, really cool shots going straight down the forest. But in terms of stones, they're hard, but they're certainly not the hardest. If we compare the Carrefour and the Forest, I think that you can't even compare them the same day, really. It's the Carrefour is so much harder, certainly in my book anyway. But I mean, I think it's every section has got its place, and every section makes the bike race hard. There's only a couple of them that you kind of ride through and thinking that that wasn't too bad. The majority of them you actually feel them. I think it's one of those races where you have to be on top of your game, have a bit of luck on your side, have some solid teammates around you. And I think the comparison that we can make is probably a super hard mountain stage. There's always going to, if you're looking at the riders that are up there every year, it's always the same kind of guys. There's always a select number of riders who are contenders for the win. And we're talking about tops 10 riders, really, that are sort of serious, serious contenders, and even less guys to actually end up winning it. And then I guess that's kind of the same as if we're looking at a Mont Ventoux. There's only a certain number of riders who are going to win on the top of a Mont Ventoux every time we go over that one, and that's Paris-Roubaix as well. So yes, you have to have all of the everything has to land perfectly on that one day, and have an incredible backup from your team, the right equipment, and like I said, a slight bit of luck as well.
There are so many stories around the race of broken bicycles and broken bones, of shortcuts taken by accident or by design, and of riders ducking under level crossings. And there are myths too. Bernardino was no fan of the cobbles, and it's often said that he won the race as world champion in 1981 and refused to come back. In fact, he did return the following year, finishing ninth. It's a race where luck plays a more than significant part. I can only think of Thomas Wegmüller losing a sprint finish against Dirk de Mol in 1988 after getting a plastic bag stuck in his gears. But a routine crash or puncture at the wrong moment can end the race. There's such chaos out on the roads, it can take minutes for the team cars to provide service for a rider who's got a problem with his bike. And it's a race of fine margins too. In 1990, Eddie Plankart beat Steve Bauer in a photo finish by only millimetres. And yet on a different day, the winning margin can be 3, 4, 5 minutes. Sometimes it's a race of surprises. That's not to say the victor doesn't deserve to win on the day, but there have been upsets over the years. Jean-Marie Wampers in 1989, Frédéric Guédon in 1997, and Johannes van Summeren in 2011 spring to mind. And sometimes it's not a surprise. Sometimes the big favourites all come to the front and battle it out themselves. In the late 1990s, the Mapei team took all three places on the podium three times, and in the last 11 years, Tom Bonin and Fabian Cancellara have taken six wins between them. The weather plays a huge part too. A dry Paris-Roubaix with a tailwind is a very different challenge to a wet race. The last truly muddy editions were in 1994 when André Schmiel pulled off a long solo attack, and 2001 when Cervase Carnarvon won. Perhaps we're overdue another wet race. But for all the talk of the cobblestones, often the decisive moves happen on the smooth roads. The last word goes to Tom Bonin again.
It depends. If you look back at the last 10, 20 years, most of the time the decisive move is made on the asphalt. So Paris-Roubaix is a race where you always have to pay attention. The cobblestones wear you down, and sometimes the right moment is just after the cobblestone. So you really have to pay attention on the wind, the competitors, the guys who you're riding with, and decide on the moment which is the one, when the moment is right. You arrive at the cobblestones and everybody's like, yeah, now it's the time. So they go hard, and nobody really thinks what comes after the cobblestones. Sometimes you go right or left, and then there's a little bit of side wind and save a little bit on the cobblestones, and then you go, and most of the time everybody's a little bit dead at that point, and it's probably most of the time the best moment.
This has been an episode of the Cycling Podcast Big Race Explainer for Eurosport. To listen to more episodes of the Cycling Podcast, visit thecyclingpodcast.com or add us on iTunes. The music in this episode is from Glass Pear and 13 Senses.